It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich. Glad to have you listening today. As was expected, President Obama unveiled his plan to hike the minimum wage for people hired on federal contracts during the State of the Union address last night. The increase to $10.10 from the current level of $7.25 an hour does not affect companies' current contracts unless a contract renewal includes other changes. That executive order comes amid a larger national debate over the minimum wage and local debates over so-called living wage legislation. A Marquette Law School poll out this week showed strong support in Wisconsin for increasing the minimum wage, but less support for raising it to $10 an hour. One group that's been pushing for increases in this area is an organization called Wisconsin Jobs Now. Executive Director Jennifer Epps Addison joins us on the line to talk about the subject. Welcome to Lake Effect.
Thank you so much for having me.
How do you react to the news that President Obama is going to use executive authority to enact at least this singular hike in the minimum wage?
Well, I think the first thing I want to do is just say congratulations to the thousands of low-wage workers from fast food and retail workers, Walmart workers, and many, many, many federal contract workers who have been standing up for the last year going out on strike and demanding action on wages and income inequality. I think the president's announcement is one piece of the puzzle and one step to say that these workers and their concerns have been heard. The question is whether Congress and whether state and local elected officials will follow suit in addressing wages and income inequality.
Do you see this as kind of a foot in the door, if you will?
Absolutely. Look, what the president is really doing is saying that I've been calling on Congress for over a year to take action on raising the minimum wage, and it's gone nowhere because of obstruction in the House. So what he's decided to do is use the tools at his disposal. He reached into his toolbox and said, if I had the power, I would raise wages for every worker in the country. But since I can't do that, what I can do is use my executive authority to raise wages for federally contracted workers. In Milwaukee County, we have something very similar being proposed by County Supervisor David Bowen. Actually, will come up for a vote this Thursday. You know, this living wage law in Milwaukee County would ensure that people who are indirectly paid through taxpayers' money in Milwaukee County are no longer working poverty wage jobs where they have to rely on public assistance just to get by.
You referenced the idea of poverty wage jobs. I mean, what do you see as the point of the minimum wage in 2014? Is there a difference between the idea of a minimum wage and a living wage?
Well, I think that that's really important. And what you'll hear, I think, if you talk to most low-wage workers is that while the president's plan is a step in the right direction, it certainly doesn't accomplish the goal. The president believes, the Pope has said recently, that we believe in a country where everybody who's willing to work hard and play by the rules can earn enough financial security that they could live independently and not have to rely on federal assistance. Unfortunately, $10.10 an hour isn't going to get us to that goal. So there's much work to be done to make sure that hard work in this country results in fair pay. And you have fast food workers and other low-wage workers standing up and demanding $15 an hour, as well as the right to form a union without retaliation. And I think that is ultimately the call of this decade. It's the call of this generation, is to restore fairness at work and to make sure, no matter what type of job you are working, that you have enough to support your family.
Now, one of the reasons that the idea of increasing the minimum wage has been bottled up in Congress for as long as it has is that there are some who believe the minimum wage increases unemployment. Some economists, I guess, are divided over it. Should we be concerned that a raise in the minimum wage could then result in a reduction in the number of jobs that are actually out there?
Well, I think this is sort of the false big boogeyman economics that has ruled the topic of conversation. The same people who spout off this idea that increasing the minimum wage hurts low-wage workers are folks who do not bat an eye, who say absolutely nothing as CEOs and executives give themselves double, triple-digit increases in salaries. If the owner of McDonald's, the CEO of McDonald's, can triple his salary last year, then he can also afford to pay his workers a living and a fair and a decent wage. And I think the rest of the country has really woken up to this. And if you look at recent polls, the vast majority of Americans support raising the minimum wage. I think that the public is well ahead of politicians on this one. And why shouldn't we be? We're not the ones who are beholden to these multi-billion dollar corporations. There used to be a time in this country where when productivity went up, when profits went up, when companies were making more, the average worker was also seeing an increase in their salary. And unfortunately, that's just not the case. Wall Street has fully recovered. It's seeing record highs. CEO and shareholder dividends are at the highest levels they've ever been. And yet, for some reason, worker wages remain stagnant. And that is, to me, the real role of the federal minimum wage, of minimum wage laws at a state. It's to hold accountable businesses who see massive rewards and profits from taxpayer investment. It's to tell those businesses that we expect a fair return for your workers if we are going to be investing and helping to make your corporations and your companies incredibly profitable.
But short of another bill that would require companies to lower executive salaries, it sounds like the workers could still be squeezed out.
Yeah, I mean, the history of increase in the minimum wage hasn't really borne out a lot of these scare tactic ideas that have come out of conservatives by and large. I think right now the pulse of the majority of economists, the pulse of the majority of the world really is that we've got to do something about income inequality to reduce income inequality. We've got to start investing in workers and their wages. And common sense tells you when 70% of your economy is consumer driven, which the American economy is, that the only way that you are able to rebuild and boost your economy is if you get more money in the hands of people who are going to go out and spend that money right away. And we know here in Wisconsin, there are more than 600,000 workers who would benefit from seeing the minimum wage increase to $10.10. Those workers are going to go out and they're going to spend their money in their local economies. They're going to boost up those economies and they're going to create new jobs because of that spending. That's how the American economy works, about 70% of it. So we know that this is not just a good policy for workers, but it's an economy-boosting policy for our state.
There are many who would like to tie the increase in the minimum wage to inflation, the rate of inflation. There are, though, some who are concerned that a broad-based wage hike would actually increase the rate of inflation, mm-hmm. and it might be a no-win situation, that as soon as you raise wages, the buying power of those dollars would decrease.
You know, again, I think these threats are scare tactics. Here's the reality. I'm an avid McDonald's eater. I am not ashamed to admit it. I go to McDonald's a lot. When I first started eating at McDonald's, you know, you can get an extra value meal for $3. Now the average extra value meal is about $6.50. So prices are already increasing. Anybody who goes to the grocery store knows that prices have increased. The question is whether or not we're going to ensure that wages continue to increase and increase at the same level as the cost of living. And unfortunately, that is not what's happening. What's happening is that we are seeing massive and record profits from corporations, and the reason they're making those profits is because they're squeezing workers and expecting more for less. It is time for us to join the movement of low-wage workers across this country and to demand a fair wage for everyone. I am incredibly proud of what has happened here in Wisconsin, because not only have we led the nation in having multiple cities go out on strike for $15 an hour in a union, but here in Milwaukee County, County Supervisor David Bowen and his colleagues were far ahead of the curve and have proposed and been working on a living wage ordinance that would give a real living wage to workers here in Milwaukee County, a wage that would allow them to get off of public assistance. And they've been working on that for the last 6 months, well ahead of the curve. They're showing the leadership that this state needs. And we would really encourage every municipality to follow the president's example. He used what tools were available to him to address this crisis, and we believe every single municipality in the state, from the city to the county to the state government, should use the tools they have available to address the good jobs crisis in Wisconsin.
Speaking of the state government, there's currently a bill proposed in the Wisconsin legislature that would bring the minimum wage up to $10.10 an hour, but phase it in between now and 2016. Is that a significant enough step for you?
Well, again, you know, we believe that we shouldn't just be talking about the minimum wage. We need to be talking about a living wage that allows workers to live independently. No worker who gets up and goes to work every day wants to come home and rely on a public assistance program to keep their lights on or to feed their children or to make sure that they have medical coverage. These are things that we believe all hardworking Wisconsinites deserve. Now, short of that, we recognize that this is a political climate that is challenging and that the polling out there shows a majority of support, even a majority of Republicans support the idea of raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. What I would say is that if we could have brave Republicans step outside of the governor's words, because we know that the governor's main concern is running nationally on a Tea Party ticket, But if we could have the majority of thinking Republicans in our state really focus in on what's best for the workers and for the communities of this state, we believe that they would join Representative Mason in a bill to raise the minimum wage for 1010. So for those reasons, we do support the bill with the acknowledgement that the workers in this state, not only are they demanding more, but they need more. We really believe that a fair wage for every worker is $15 an hour with the right to form a union with no retaliation.
The other argument that you probably hear a lot of, but I'm curious to get your take on, is, you know, people say, well, it's all well and good to be talking about these large corporations, but what do you say to business owners who might be looking at, you know, shaky finances, who say, you know, they're not sure they can afford to pay workers more and keep the lights on and the doors open?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the reality that folks have to understand is the majority of low-wage workers and minimum-wage workers are being employed in large corporations. They are being employed in our hospitals. They're being employed through our county or our local governments. They're being employed through the federal government. They're being employed through multi-billion-dollar corporations. That is the majority of folks that are struggling under these low wages. In terms of the small businesses know more than any other type of company how important their customers are and how important growing their customer base is. If we continue in an economy where we're taking more and more money out of the pockets of your everyday workers, whether that's a fast food worker or a state employee or someone who owns their own business, if we're taking more and more money out of their pockets, then there is nothing left to help stimulate that local economy. Raising the minimum wage will do more to boost the sales, the customer base, and the revenues of small businesses than, you know, nearly any other policy that we can reasonably pass.
You talk about kind of a two-prong issue here, the idea that a living wage really is $15 an hour in this day and age, but you also call for the right for everyone to organize collectively. Why is that second part such an important part of the equation for you?
You know, honestly, I have to say that this is an education that I got from the brave workers I've had the privilege of working with and alongside for the last year. When we started talking about raising the minimum wage to workers, their reaction was, that's great, but I still have all of these other issues that aren't related to how much money I'm making. Those issues were things like wage theft, being forced to either work uncompensated hours or having money stolen from their paychecks by being forced to use these prepaid debit cards that charge astronomical fees. They were fair scheduling and the right to be able to pick up a second job to be able to support your family because you knew exactly when and where you had to go into work the next day. A fair process for grievances and dealing with things like sexual harassment. These are the types of issues that workers need to address on a daily basis, and the best forum and the best way for them to do that is to be able to form a union. It's the only way to have any level of parity between you and your employer. And so while we talk about people needing to make a decent wage, at the end of the day, what we're really saying is that everybody in this country deserves dignity and respect at work. Dignity in the wage that they make, but also dignity in their treatment and their expectations for treatment with their employer.
Jennifer Epps Addison, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jennifer Epps Addison is executive director of the Milwaukee-based organization Wisconsin Jobs Now, which advocates for increases to the minimum wage. President Obama's State of the Union address included plans for an increase in the minimum wage for workers hired through federal contracts. The president's State of the Union address came on the heels of Governor Walker's State of the State address last week. Lake Effect contributor and essayist Art Sear takes a crack at the state of the world economy.
Nattering nabobs of negativism is probably the most enduring of the many alliterative pronouncements of Spiro Agnew. He was vice president in the Nixon administration until forced to resign because of corruption. This particular phrase, penned by Nixon speechwriter Bill Sapphire, derogatively denigrated diligent reporters for placing bad news above good. Why, Agnew asked rhetorically, did the malicious media not put priority on the positive? He attacked pusillanimous pussyfooters allegedly allergic to America. Inspired by the positive points of the spirit of Spiro, good news, Agnew, below is a list of definitive developments that definitely deserve dissemination and discussion in 2014. First, democracy is becoming the accepted way of life for the world's population overall, not just the privileged few. As recently as three decades ago, people in Latin America lived almost uniformly under various degrees of authoritarian dictatorial rule. Today, Fidel Castro's Cuba is literally the only remaining dictatorship in the Americas. Despite pervasive state control and an internal security apparatus which is rightly feared as well as respected, the increasingly desperate need for foreign investment is forcing Havana's geriatric communists to loosen their iron grip. Even autocratic Hugo Chavez of Venezuela had to face the voters, and near the end of his long rule, he lost on occasion. Once, tiny Costa Rica was the beacon of freedom south of the border. Now that light spreads throughout the Americas. Likewise, reasonably honest and genuinely contested elections are spreading in Africa, Southeast Asia, the former Soviet Union, and, on the local level at least, in China. In global context, the dramatic Arab Spring, therefore, is the latest manifestation of a worldwide drive toward fair and representative government. The Korean Peninsula is especially instructive in this regard. While attention is focused on the apocalyptic rhetoric and brutal actions of the North Korea regime, South Korea continues remarkable positive economic and political progress. South Korea's duly elected first woman president, Park Geun-hye, was inaugurated at the start of 2013. She is the daughter of the late President Park Chung-hee. When she was very young, her mother was shot and killed by a North Korean assassin aiming for her father. Despite past traumas, she seeks cooperation with the North, extending a stable hand of friendship. Second, market economics likewise is spreading, as alternative ways of producing wealth and prosperity are discredited. Deng Xiaoping's declaration of people's socialism for China in 1992 has become a benchmark event for not only that nation, but the Asia region as a whole and beyond. The Economic Cooperation Framework Agreement between mainland China and Taiwan is an historic result of the free market economic revolution. Virtually all economic barriers have come down. In consequence, Taiwan's role as source of investment, trade, and expertise for the mainland is vastly expanding. Third, remarkable global progress proceeds from a base of extraordinary growth in economic production over the long term. Yale historian Paul Kennedy, in his book The Rise and Fall of the Great Powers, notes total world industrial manufacturing rose from an assigned base level of 100 in 1900 to over 3,041 by 1980. And this has continued. In industrial nations, the average human lifespan doubled in the 20th century. For more on the improving human condition, you should consult the Cato Institute's libertarian volume entitled It's Getting Better All the Time by Stephen Moore and Julian Simon. As these developments imply, free competitive economies and open competitive elections are interconnected historically and currently. Adam Smith's classic book, The Wealth of Nations, appeared in 1776. Not coincidentally, that is the same year the American Revolution began.
Essayist Art Sear is Clausen Professor of Political Economy and World Business and Director of the Clausen Center for World Business at Carthage College in Kenosha. The case for climate change when it's 10 below zero, when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.